Well, I think, you know, there are moments in the continent's history that seem to stand out more than others. I think of 1994, when South Africa was born, the new South Africa was born. Africa was showing its best foot forward, on that occasion. But at exactly the same time, we were having that horrific genocide in Rwanda. You know, so that 1994 has to stand out as a year that's very special in the history of Africa. I think 2011 has a similar reason for standing out certainly in my memory. And the first reason was the wonderful occasion of being there in Sudan, in Juba, for the birth of the world's newest nation when the referendum was taken and the South Sudan had opted to become the world's newest nation, which happened then in July. And I think that was a really wonderful start for Africa for the year 2011, giving us a very clear understanding, I think, that Africans, when they are given the chance, will make the right decisions. But it's just a matter of, are they going to be given the chance to do so? So for me, that was one of the first bright lights for 2011. Then I think another bright light would have been in July, when the actual independence celebration of the South Sudan took place. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be at that particular celebration, but some of the representatives from our bishops' conference were there, and they say it was absolutely marvelous. There were things done very symbolically, showing that the South Sudan was separating. It wasn't becoming independent. It was becoming a separate country, but it wasn't breaking away. It wasn't becoming a subservient state. It was separating to stand on its own feet. In other words, like a teenager reaching the age when they are given majority and can start making their own decisions. So that's what, for me, is the second very, very bright moment for Africa. The third one, I think, would have to be the Pope's visit to Cotonou, to Benin, to launch the apostolic exhortation that came out of the Second African Synod. In 2009 was when the Synod was held, and here was now the exhortation being launched. In the meantime, of course, we had the Arab Spring. We had all those movements, popular movements, people getting fed up with the way things were going, Egypt, Tunisia, then Libya, and so on and so forth, all across the northern part of Africa, giving us, another picture of how even long-suffering people eventually will reach a point when they say, enough is enough. And we want to be able to determine, I should say, we should like to determine our own future and determine it on the basis of what is good for us and not good for a small elite of leaders. I think that's been, for me, the major positives. On the negative side, we've seen what happened in Libya, how the country was virtually sacrificed by Gaddafi in order to hold on to his power and his position, his security, I suppose, ultimately what he was trying to protect. And as so often happens, when you sacrifice the good of the people, it does you no good in the end. And I think Gaddafi found that to his great detriment. The other aspects, I think, of the changes in Africa, elections that are won and lost and then contested, and then it goes on and on and on. And unfortunately, always that fear that civil war isn't too far away. So once again, I think 2011 has been a year with bright lights, but also very dark patches as far as Africa is concerned.
Yes, let's spare a thought for those nations who still have much to say for themselves because they are under repressive regimes.
Yes, yes. What the importance of that Arab Spring was that it has given people hope that the will of the people can ultimately win, even against odds that are absolutely unimaginable, I would say.
It's incredible to think of Africa at this moment when here in Europe we are living such a difficult and depressing crisis. Africa seems to represent a new life, rebirth.
And you know, the Pope has picked that up as well. Already earlier on he had said something to the effect, and he repeated it in Cotonou, that Africa is the lung of the world, you know, is the lung of the church. The oxygen, the new life is going to come from Africa. He was really thrilled. You know, it was wonderful to see a man who's in his 80s almost being like a little boy with enthusiasm for what he experienced of the church in Africa. It was his first exposure in 2009 when he came to Cameroon and Angola. And he's made so many references to it that it's quite clear that it touched him very deeply. And then the second one, this Cotonou experience, was equally important for him. Of course, in the meantime, what also affected Africa, but to a lesser, not as directly, was the World Youth Day in Spain, in Madrid, where once again, I think the Pope focused his attention, his love and his concern on the young people. And I noticed that his message for the new year is equally focused on young people. So it's almost as if he's saying, what I've learned from Africa is that there's a young continent, a young church, that's the hope of the future. And here are young people all over the world who are also the hope of the future. So let's try and learn from what the young church is doing and saying and implant that spirit into the young people of the world, and in that way get a new invigorated faith and church into action again.
He has also given the African church a new instrument with which to track, hopefully, yes, a better future. And maybe it's particularly important in a place like your own South Africa. I know next year the ANC will be holding its election, which is very important politically for the country. Do you have a hope that the bishops, the priests, will in fact be able to bring their message to your leaders?
I am not so hopeful, I'm afraid. I think there's such a leadership struggle and power struggle going on within the ANC that I think everyone is just looking at how can I secure my position rather than what do we need to become, to be and to do in order to serve the country using our rich history of the past. The struggle history of the ANC, the struggle history of the people who may not have been members of the ANC, but nonetheless were opposing apartheid and any other kind of injustice. I think instead of looking at what they can do together with the people, they're looking at how can we secure our position so that we continue to be in control of the people. I'm not very hopeful about the type of leadership that is currently in the ANC, and I'm even more fearful, I would say, of the type of leadership that Julius Malema presents. If that's the kind of leadership that's going to replace Jacob Zuma, then we're into a situation where maybe in a few years' time we'll have to have an African Spring, not an Arab Spring, but an African Spring coming up with an equally vigorous civil society movement that's going to oppose the kind of dictatorships that some of the parties are imposing on their populations.
Do you think Julius Malema still poses a threat to democracy in South Africa?
I think so, yes. I think it's a serious threat because none of the ANC, the senior leaders, seem to be able to answer him. And those who should be and could do so are the ones who are keeping quiet because they either are opposing Jacob Zuma. They may not be directly supporting Malema, but they certainly are sympathetic towards him in his fight with Jacob Zuma. That, I think, is quite clear, and that's where I see a real danger that things could run out of control. Because if the ANC, if infighting starts in the ANC, it's going to spread into the wider population.